Welcome, everyone, to the Soda Fountain's interview with David Griffin. You would all know David as the character of Jimmy Barkley on Adventures in Odyssey. He actually was with the show for pretty much the entire run in the early years until the hiatus. So, David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's quite great to hear your voice. After all these years, to actually be speaking with you is quite an honor.
Oh, thank you very much. You're far too kind.
So, I am the host, Shadowpaw, and we have questions here from the fans who have been submitting questions to the Soda Fountain for the last few weeks. The first question we have is from both James Moore and Jonathan. They would like to know how you got started on Adventures in Odyssey.
I got started, we had moved from Texas out to Southern California back in 1987. At the time, I was pretty lonely and didn't have much to do, so my mom got me involved in a local Christian community theater that was being run by one of my favorite people ever, a lady by the name of Martine Craig. She attended the same church and knew Steve Harris. He was looking for kids, and one day after a rehearsal for a play we were doing, she called a group of us up and said, there's an audition for some kind of radio show thing. So I went, and I didn't really know what it was for. I remember it was right as they had moved into their facilities in Pomona. The carpet was still being put in, and furniture was being moved in, and they brought us into one of the offices, and they had a couple microphones set up on a desk and handed us a script, and it was me and another young lady, and came pretty naturally to me. I was always a good reader. And then about 2 weeks later, got the telephone call to come in and record an episode, and I was a basket case for the next week. Did it, and thought that was going to be a one-time thing.
Do you recall who was actually at that first meeting that you auditioned for? Was that Steve and Phil, or?
I remember that Steve was there. I don't recall if Phil was there or not. It was such a quick little audition. I know that there was a total of four people in the room. It was two of them and two of us, and I believe Steve was one of the guys. And it may have been Phil, but memory fails me on that one. I do remember who most of the people were at the first taping session.
Oh, who were they?
Hal was there. I met him for the first time. Steve was there. I believe Walker was there. I want to say Will was there. I was just in so much awe of, you know, who these older gentlemen were doing all these crazy voices. So it was wonderful, wonderful. First show.
I think Will would have been there, because that would probably be the life of the party, correct?
Yep, and Will. They usually would record two episodes at a time, so I know both episode one and two were recorded on the same day, so I believe whoever was there for one would have been there for the second.
Did they give you any kind of indication that you were going to be on the program for a while, or?
Not at all. Not until, maybe even after they gave me the part of Jimmy Barkley, did I understand that it was an ongoing thing, especially the first time I did it, I thought that was it. And then they called back again to record episodes 3 and 4. I thought, you know, this is cool. And I was never kept much in the loop on any of the production side of things. So I never really knew, you know, if it was just going to be sort of like a Family Portraits, 6 or 12 episodes of, you know, a one-time thing, or I'm very surprised it's been going on for 20 years. So
oh, yeah.
Pretty well.
It's not slowing down either.
That's good.
All right, so I guess we'll move on to some other questions here. We have just one from the BC, who's a member of the town of Odyssey. He'd like to know who was your favorite actor to work with on Odyssey.
Oh, there's a couple. I have to say Hal, because he was just such a fun presence to be around. And he was really good at working with the kids. You know, it felt like you were hanging out with your grandfather for the day. He would do things. I have a memory one time where he picked up a trash can and started making these horse sounds into it right by my ear.
Practicing for Beauty and the Beast?
I think it was right after that film had come out. Perhaps he was showing off a little bit. But I can remember just in between takes or back in that day, we would be recording on a reel-to-reel, and when the tape would run out, he would start riffing and doing different characters, and that was a lot of fun. I always enjoyed working with Chuck Bolte. He was sort of a surrogate father to me in some respects, and he has one of the greatest laughs I've ever heard in my life.
Yes, I have actually heard some sound clips of his laugh. Very distinctive. Yeah, it's...
Well, if you can imagine, he would... He was notorious for never being able to get a line out sometimes, and everybody would just be in hysterics because he'd start laughing. And then Corey Burton also, I would have to say, is in my top three. Just all three of them are warm, wonderful people, and the kind of people you want to go hang out with, you know.
I know that those three would probably be in my... I mean, I just haven't worked with them, but I know just in terms of their talent that they bring to the show, those three are definitely up there by far the best actors on the show.
Hal Smith was amazing in his range. He could just do so much, and I thought I would never meet anybody that talented again until the day I met Corey, and if I thought Hal was amazing, Corey is out of this world. He's the only person that his voice continues to surprise me. I'll be watching something and oh, that's narrated by Corey Burton, you know. How is that possible? You know, he's just almost a savant with his abilities. It's pretty amazing.
Okay, now we have a question from Alex Chelson, and he'd like to know, or perhaps it's a girl, do you and Jimmy Barkley have anything in common?
Yeah, mainly because I always sort of felt that I was Jimmy. I don't think there was ever much of a separation between me and you know, when you're young as an actor, I don't think you quite have a character ideal. And certainly his sarcasm, the brother-sister arguing things, my brothers and I were notorious for endless arguments over nothing. And, you know, his sense of humor, his sense of imagination, I think I identified with him a lot like that because I have a tendency to daydream and go off into la-la land. Maybe I'm battling pirates or whatever. So that, to me, was always a lot of fun with Jimmy because I sort of got to act out what I did. So I'd say there's more similarities than dissimilarities.
Did you have a sidekick like Lawrence?
I have had many sidekicks over the years.
Yeah, Lawrence hasn't been on the show in a long time. I think a lot of fans miss him and your interaction. That was a highlight for many.
It was an interesting experience for me because I remember when my voice changed. I remember the only time I was ever called in to talk to anybody, Chuck brought me into his office and said that, you know, because the voice is changing, we're going to have to figure out a different way to make him relevant. And one of the ideas he floated at that time was having Jimmy kind of mentor a younger version of him. And I believe that's where Lawrence came from. And he was I think his name's Gabe.
Yeah,
wonderful
Gabriel.
Kid. Yeah, Gabriel.
Gabriel Incarnation, I believe, is his last name. I don't really know how to say
He was such a wonderful kid, and it was a great thing that they did for me because it kept me in the show a little bit longer. I got to have some of the younger fun that I had had in terms of the wacky adventures and things like that through Lawrence. Great kid. I always wonder how he's doing.
He had a little bit part in an episode where he was, I believe, in a gang. He briefly just made an appearance. It wasn't as Lawrence. It was as a different character. But I believe that was in the episode Best Laid Plans. And
Best Laid Plans.
And he might have been in Chains, but I can't quite recall. Okay, we have another question here from Hackaber. Do you still listen to Adventures in Odyssey?
No, I don't. The problem for me was always early on, I could never find it on the radio station or else I would tend to sleep in after it had just come on. There were a couple occasions, though, where our family, much like the Barclays, would go on summer vacations across the country. And I remember we were in Bristol, Tennessee, which is the town where my father grew up. And he clicked on the radio, and suddenly there was Jimmy and Donna having an argument. And then we were back in that area almost a year later, and he did the same thing again, just clicked on the radio, and sure enough, there comes Jimmy Barkley piping through the which is a very odd experience.
No kidding.
To, you know, be on a family vacation and then suddenly hear yourself on the radio. But most of my connection to listening to the show would come in the tapes that they would send me of the episodes I had done, and that was my exposure to it.
I guess speaking of episodes, among the episodes you were actually in, which one was your favorite and why?
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot. The Aloha Oi episodes were some of the most fun to record because it was on any given session, there might be three, four, maybe a half a dozen people doing a recording. It seems to be my recollection that with Aloha Oi, there was like a dozen people there. And you talk about chaos. It was just a blast to do those episodes. I really enjoyed the episode where I think Jimmy's in the coma and Nagel's there. Yep. I remember that being, for its sheer creativity, that was one of my favorites. The coming of age one was a rather painful episode to do, but it was one of my favorites because I understood at the time that it was specifically written for me and what I was going through at the time. And so I know that that was a favorite more for personal reasons than for having fun reasons.
I think, I mean, that's actually one of my favorite episodes too, mainly because of the development with Jimmy having a crush on Connie. I really like that, to have actually a kid with a crush on a main character who we watched grow up.
We had, Darcy and I, my wife, were debating about that yesterday. There were a couple of episodes that had been done early on before I was Jimmy Barkley, playing right. Bobby whatever.
Yeah.
There were, I think, two particular episodes that were later re-recorded under the Jimmy Barkley character because of the issues with Officer Harley. And so it was the second time, actually, I'd had to have a crush on Connie. And I remember Katie... I was already nervous enough, and Katie has a really wacky sense of humor, and she came up to me and whispered in my ear, she's like, "Do you want me to put on some perfume? Would that make it easier?" And of course, me being the prepubescent teen I was, immediately I think I turned beet red and stammered and walked out of the studio. So I think that would be the second time I had a crush on Connie.
Yeah, no, I love that episode, and a lot of fans do love that, too, and I think it's also because fans can relate to it. Everyone goes through that.
Yeah, it was a special episode. I don't think at that time, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they had really dealt with that kind of issue up to that point in the show, and it was kind of interesting because I remember there being this feeling of sort of like, you know, where are we going to go with this character, and to do something, you know, as a kid, especially a boy when your voice is changing, you're nervous and self-conscious about it, and to be able to poke some fun at it was rather therapeutic, to say the least.
All right, and there's a follow-up question to that, and I don't believe I named who actually provided that question. That would have been David C., Elf, and Elizabeth. They all basically had the same question in mind. Now, what was the favorite Adventures in Odyssey episode that you were not in? You might not recall the names of them or any of that, but if you can describe an episode, if there is one.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if there is because I loved the episodes that they threw my way so much. I can remember some of the other episodes that I read on a day when they would be taping multiple shows and they'd call me in for like the afternoon session. I would read the other one and kind of think to myself, "Oh, I'm glad I'm not doing that one. I'm glad I get to be Jimmy." But, I don't know, that's hard to say. I got to have a lot of fun. I would say any episode that involved the Imagination Station, I loved those. I thought that was some really brilliant writing.
You never did get to take a trip in that. Oh, wait, no, you did, Moses.
Yeah, Moses. Yeah. I think Lincoln, too.
Oh, right. I just completely have shattered my... everyone's illusion that I'm an expert on Adventures in Odyssey there.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, no, those are also two great episodes.
Moses was a good one. I seem to recall that one came about, that was recorded right after Coming of Age.
That would be about right, I believe. I don't have the list in front of me. But that would have been around that same time frame.
Yeah, I think I hadn't done anything in a while. And they called me in. It was kind of a weird session, not the Moses session, but the Conscientious Crossing Guard, I think. It was myself and Donald Long and right. Chad, and none of the three of us had done the show at least in over a year, so it was kind of like a weird reunion. And then it was shortly after that that they brought Jimmy in a little bit more.
All right, now moving on, we have a question from Jacob Isom. He actually used to run the Odyssey Scoop. Looking back, What was the one thing you would change about the Barkley character you played?
That's a good question. I always wanted to do heavier episodes. Things that, as I grew up and became a teenager, there were sort of life issues that were coming my way and little problems I didn't quite know how to deal with. And I always felt that the fans who had been with the show from the beginning probably were growing up and going through a lot of those things too. And I would have liked to have gotten into some deeper territory, so to speak. But at the same time, the audience age range is so specific that, you know, you have to be really careful what kind of stuff is there. But I would have liked to have seen Jimmy go into some deeper things, and that'd probably be the only change. Yeah.
The darker side.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got a bit of a dark side in Living in the Gray.
Little bit. That was kind of interesting.
Not a complete turn for the character.
I knew when I read it, I was like, well, of course Jimmy's a tabloid reporter, you know? That makes perfect sense.
I guess speaking of Living in the Gray, King Shasta would like to know that, could you tell us about your experiences coming back to Odyssey for Living in the Gray and working with the new writing staff, interacting with Katie Lee, and having a ditzy girlfriend? How did you feel about all that?
I felt wonderful about it, to be doing it again after not having done it so long. I think I was a bit nervous that I wouldn't be able to be Jimmy enough as I was in earlier years. But Chuck was standing next to me on one side and Katie was on the other, and it was like this perfect flashback to such a favorite childhood time that it was easier to jump into. The new writing staff, I know Marshall was there, mm-hmm. and I've known him. I think he even told me once I recorded the first episode he ever wrote. I could be wrong on that, though.
It
was the first one he directed.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense.
My assistant here dug it up. But it was a lot of fun. It felt good to be back doing the regular thing. And then at the end of it, Marshall and Chuck both had good things to say, and that made me feel great. And it was a wonderful time. I was sad to see it end, like I'm always sad to see the sessions end.
Is there any way that you would like to reintroduce Jimmy to the show? Do you have any ideas of a storyline of how you would like to see the character if he were to come back?
I don't know. I heck, if it was me, it would be Adventures of Jimmy Barkley, which may not be entirely fair.
Well, we do have a question here from someone asking if you would have preferred the show to be called Adventures of Pokenberry Falls.
You know, the thing they were telling us when, I remember when we came in to record the Pokenberry Falls episode was Chuck or Paul or somebody said at that time that they were talking about doing a spinoff with the Barkleys that would sort of take place in Pokenberry Falls. And, of course, I don't think it never panned out, obviously. I'd love to come back to this show because it was such a fun experience to record with all these talented people. But the capacity to do that, I don't know, it's a little difficult because I know that Chuck is living elsewhere these days and it's harder to kind of coordinate everybody. I think they should bring him back and have him work in the soda shop or something.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of fans would like that, myself included. Although I think every character I've ever loved that I'd like to come back to this series,
yeah.
I've always wanted them to just go work at the soda shop. So, who knows? It could just be a cameo appearance every other week.
Someday they'll find a new room in Wit's End, and locked in there will be all the characters from years past.
Wit's been locking up everyone he's ever loved. The secret lair. Okay, moving on. We have a question from CJ. He'd like to know, did your peers listen to the show? And if so, what was their reaction?
I knew of almost no one my whole life that ever even had heard of the show. Which was odd, because at the time I was going to a private Christian junior high school. But none of my peers listened to it. And so it was kind of this weird feeling to go and record an episode and be excited about it and be feeling good about having this special thing I got to do. And then I couldn't really talk about it to anybody because no one understood it.
Right.
So it was kind of weird. But none of my peers did. Since then, I've met a few friends, one of my friends just told me the other day that his stepdad raised his kids on it. And I've been friends with this guy for about 2 years now. We were both shocked. I never got the chance to have that weird interaction with any friends.
And I thought it was sad that no one knows Adventures in Odyssey where I am, and I just run the website. So I can't imagine how you feel.
I think that's why when I went to visit Focus on the Family back in the summer of 2003, mm-hmm. I was really surprised. They have a board, as you know, that has all the little pins pushed in on the map of all the different stations around the world where it's played. I was shocked. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I mean, people all over the world are hearing your voice on a daily basis, but until now, I guess, you really haven't had much exposure to that.
No, which is kind of nice. It probably would have gone in my head, I would imagine. So, you know, to me, the experience of doing it began and ended in the taping sessions. And then I would go back on with my normal life in between. I lived a double life, basically.
Any advice for someone who'd like to break into the business? That's what Ruthie would like to know.
What you need to do, it's funny, I had the same summer that I went to visit Focus on the Family, I met a youth pastor at a church in Dallas. So I went down to Dallas anyways because I was having a family reunion. I decided to stop in. It was cool. They were doing a lot of these plays for kids. And anyways, long story short, one of the actresses in the play, she got into acting because of listening to the Odyssey episodes. And she asked me the same question. And the advice I gave her was somehow record, if you're talking specifically voiceovers, you need to record a voiceover demo tape, which usually runs about a minute to 2 minutes long. On it, you know, there's different kinds of tapes. Maybe you want to do character voices, so do a bunch of different character voices. Or maybe you want to take advantage of the youth of your voice and play kid characters like Odyssey or something. And try and get it produced decently so there's some sound effects. And then you start, if you don't have any contacts, any friends who are in the industry, then it's a matter of finding lists of agencies that specialize in voiceovers. And submitting and submitting and submitting and submitting and never giving up. And eventually, if you work hard at it, it'll come through. That'd be the best advice I could give. Otherwise, if you're friends with somebody like Corey Burton, just call him up.
He's got connections.
Lots of them.
I guess speaking along those lines of acting, Cowboy of Texas was wondering how you found acting in front of a screen different from acting in front of a microphone. And just to clarify, for people who weren't aware that David has actually been on screen, would you like to also talk about one of your projects?
Biggest difference is on screen you can be silent and have a little actor's moment. And on the radio, you can't. All action has to be done through your voice. In some ways, I think acting behind a microphone is a bit more physical because you do have to, you know, move your body in such a way that, you know, you sound out of breath or you sound like you're moving or whatever the scene requires. The other difference is when you're working in film, it tends to be filmed in a non-linear form. So there's much more of a mental puzzle to put together in terms of emotional continuity, making sure the two scenes that are shot 2 weeks apart, but in the film they're right next to each other, the correct arc is there, and you make an entrance having just come from this moment. You know, it's sort of a little puzzle, and it's I get joy out of both, though. But I think film acting kind of appeals more to my Rubik's Cube loving mentality, I guess. What was the second half of that question?
Some people won't be familiar with some of your screen projects, and if you were wanted to take this opportunity to talk about some of them.
There's not much yet, but there's some stuff that I'm working on currently that if I can get funding, hopefully people will be able to see in the future.
And they can find out more information at jadegriffin.com?
Absolutely. We just set that up, so it's taking a little while to get everything on it that we want.
Speaking of the name Jave, we had a couple people write in asking about the origin of that name. Obviously, your name is David, so people are kind of wondering why you changed your name.
My full name is James Davidson Griffin. I always went by David. All my friends have known me as Dave my whole life, but whenever I worked or went to school, I was called James. And I was attending Academy Radio Broadcasting about 5 or 6 years ago, and had kind of gotten out of the acting loop, thought maybe I was going to go into radio production or something like that. And there was a gentleman there who was an actor, and he was talking about starting up a workshop. And long story short there is he knew me as James from work, and then sometimes I have this nasty habit of referring to myself in the third person. And so I think he heard me call myself Dave a couple of times, and he's like, "Well, who are you, James, Dave? You're Jave." And it just stuck.
Okay.
So it was an acting coach that brought that on.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody seems to like it, and I'm still Dave, but for SAG reasons, I believe there's another Dave out there. And I figured, well, I got a nickname, and nobody else has a nickname quite like that, so we'll go with it.
Okay. Nate the Great is wondering if you can still do the world-famous Jimmy Barkla Donna Shriek. And if you can, can you do it for us now?
Oh, man. I can try.
That's all we asked for.
Donna! That would be the closest I could come.
Thanks for saying that in, Nate. I never would have thought of that.
I still have, actually, this is true. Sometimes in my dreams, I hear myself scream that.
Oh, really?
It's ingrained in me, I guess.
Speaking of Donna, what was it like to work with Azure, and do you have any stories about the two of you recording in the studio? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. She was a really fun young lady. I think I tended to get on her nerves the way that Jimmy got on her nerves. She was always rather quiet, never to talk. We didn't really interact much. I think we were both sort of shy and awkward. But she was a really cool person. And as far as specific memories with her, you know, the memory that always sort of jumps to my mind is the last time we recorded together. And there wasn't any specific event, but I remember just sort of we chatted a bit, and, you know, I guess this is the last one. And, you know, there goes 10 years of working together in some respect. And she's great. Azure was a lot of fun to work with, and she had a great sense of humor and really talented too. I was always sort of surprised because I don't think she's acting anymore, but she was really naturally gifted at it. That would be my Azure recollection, so to speak.
So you don't keep in touch with any of the other child actors who left the show?
No, not at all. I hear things occasionally on the few times that they brought me in over the last couple years. You know, I know Donald got married.
Right, to Lucy.
Yeah.
Well, to Jenny.
And which I think most people saw coming because they had been friends before the show.
Oh, really?
Was on. I think the story goes like that, that they were family friends, and they both got into the show, I think, through the same avenue, although I don't know which way that was. But I don't know too much about most of the kids, which it's sort of funny to think about that, you know, you spend a little time together with somebody and then they sort of drop off the face of the earth.
And I think too, for most fans, I mean, you were in the room for a couple of hours to record your shows, and then you would part your ways, whereas fans listen to these shows on a weekly basis, and to them, outside of the radio, you were together all the time, but
yeah.
It's a job.
And especially there was a period of time during those early years when they were still working out a lot of the kinks in the show where, gosh, for about 6 months to a year, I remember that they would record the adults and the kids separately because some of the kids were a bit hyper. And I guess it would have been it was stressful on the adults at that time. So sometimes I can remember being brought in and I would be in there completely by myself. Other times it was a room full of people, you know. It would take about 4 hours to record an episode and then everybody would go their separate ways. I think the adults on the show know each other much better than the kids ever did because they work in so many other elements of the industry. And I know Katie and Hal and Corey, and those guys go back years, you know.
And you were pretty close with Chuck when you were on the series, correct?
Yeah, Chuck was he's Chuck. He's, you have to know the man to love him the way I do. He's just a lot of fun. And he and I had some really good moments recording together.
And for those wondering, Chuck Bolte was the voice of George Barkley, of course, Jimmy's father.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a few more questions here. How did you feel and how did you find out about the Barkleys being written out of the show?
Well, I found out the day that I went in to do the episode. They never would tell you what the episode was about before. I think partly they wanted the spontaneity you know, you getting the script and quickly marking your lines and then going and start recording. Because it, from a production standpoint, it, I'm sure it kept the show much more realistic that way. So I didn't find out until I was handed the script, and I was devastated. It was like having an uncle you're close to die or something. It was a rather painful experience for me because this was a thing that I loved to do so much. I would get a call, and you know, maybe a month in advance, 2 months in advance, and I wouldn't be able to sit still in school because it was just so much fun to come in and record. So to know that I wasn't going to get the opportunity to do it anymore, I was pretty sad because it, you know, in a certain respect, when you're working with people like that at a young age, they become a part of your family, and you know, like cousins and uncles or something. And to know that this fun that I get to have once every couple months, I'm not going to get to have it anymore, was a difficult adjustment. But then at the same time, I kind of had to look at the fact that I was kept on the show much, much longer than anyone had the right to, really. And so I was blessed and fortunate in that respect. And oddly enough, when I was at Focus on the Family in 2003, I came across a family that the father was a pastor, and he had to move to another state, and he was telling me that his kids were having a hard time with it, and they listened to those episodes, those Pocumberry Falls episodes, on the whole drive. And that was really the first time that I was like, well, you know what? Good things happen in bad moments. You know, it just depends on which side of the air you're on.
Now, was that the first time you'd ever really discovered how many lives the show had touched?
Yes, definitely. I had occasionally bumped into one or two people. You know, I would go to a friend's church or something, and there would be a kid there that had some Odyssey tapes or had one of the set collections. But that was the first time I'd ever met complete strangers. And it was a rather moving experience because unlike some of the theater work that I've done, or especially when you do film, you do it and, you know, that's it. To Odyssey fans are, it means something to them, something much more than any other, you know, average show. And so to meet complete strangers who were somehow affected by something you did was really awesome.
Along those same lines, Mr. Witt was wondering if you're a Christian, and if so, can you tell us how you were saved?
I am. I sort of tend to fall by the wayside more than I should. I don't want to disappoint any fans. I was saved at the time my buddy Christian and I went to a particular church, and they did the call up, and at that point we went up and did it. But I've always been in and out of the church, and I'm sort of a, what would be the best way to describe it?
A real-life Jimmy Barkley?
A real-life Jimmy Barkley, absolutely. Faith is never anything that's come easy to me. My brother, it comes very easy to, or well, that's probably not fair to say, but easier. I've always tended to be, you know, and especially if you're in any particular faith and you take philosophy in college, that has a tendency to throw lots of doubts and things. But I still believe. I just tend to sometimes be closer to it and sometimes farther away from it. So yes, a real life Jimmy.
Okay. I guess we have a gentleman by the name of Karl Marx, and he's wondering if you're married.
Yes, I am. I am married to my beautiful wife, who's sitting right here. Say hello, Darcy.
Hello.
We've been together for, what year is it, 2006?
Yeah.
Almost 8 years now.
Wow.
We met working at Disneyland. We were performers in the Mulan Parade. And she was a dancer, and I was one of 17 people operating a ridiculously large dragon puppet, and things went from there. And we weren't repelled by each other. And
that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's a great sign, you know, when somebody is not repelled by you.
And just so fans know, this interview wouldn't even be taking place had Darcy not put David and I in contact with each other.
It's all my wife's fault, that's true. When I met her, I believe the Pocumberry Falls episode had been recorded, and so she never was really exposed to it, and just out of the habit of never really talking about it over the years, I never really said much to her. And being the computer whiz that she is, she started hunting around on the web and came across your site, and yes, contacted you. You wrote a wonderful review for the Living in the Gray episodes, and she wanted to use it on our website. And you had sent her back saying, you know, would would I be interested in doing some email questions? And I said, how about an audio interview? And that's how it happened.
There we are today. I think fans will love it.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope it doesn't disappoint.
Oh, me too. I'm really hoping this recording worked out. Do you two have any children?
We do. My daughter, Kimberly, she's 2.5, and she is a pistol. She's just saved my life, I'll say that. She's and I had the luxury of being a stay-at-home dad for the first 2.5 years of her life. And for anybody who has kids and has had the opportunity to stay at home, you know what a wonderful experience it is. For any dads out there that or future dads, if you ever get the chance to be a stay-at-home dad, take it, because it's a rarity in life. Definitely, I believe, a gift from God.
Wow. Now, I have a question here from Ben. What do you do for a living?
Currently, I have a whole bunch of film projects I'm trying to get off the ground, a documentary I'm trying to get done, some scripts that I'm in the process of writing, or they're in some various stage of writing, and basically trying to just raise money for it and do that kind of thing. As far as what am I doing for a living? It's a bit of a complicated question. I was injured in a car accident several years back and, you know, couldn't walk and couldn't work, that sort of thing. So been on Social Security for a little bit, trying to get back on my feet. And I also have a tendency to go out occasionally and do a little bit of DJing. And occasionally, when I get in the mood for it, I will juggle fire.
Oh, wow. You're a fire juggler.
I am a fire juggler, and so sometimes I can make some money doing that for parties and things, and that's it for right now.
Getting a bit off topic here, but are you a video gamer like Jimmy is, or...
I do enjoy a PlayStation 2 from time to time. I enjoy, my favorite game currently is Madden 2006. It's my addiction currently, actually.
Well, there's a lot worse things to be addicted to.
True. My brother is a phenomenal video gamer, and he would be much more like Jimmy than I would. I tend to play video games once in a while.
Okay. Now, this is a question I've been long wanting to know, ever since we were put in contact with each other. How was it working with Hal Smith? We've discussed that, but how was it getting to know him, and how did you feel, and how did you find out about his death?
Working with him, it was just amazing. There was the Hal inside the studio, and then there was the Hal outside the studio. And it's the same man, but a different experience. Outside the studio, he would be sitting at the table. You know, guys like Howie Morris would be there. And, you know, to hear a bunch of old pros talking about, you know, recording live television, and it's sort of the image you have of a bunch of old vaudevillians sitting around smoking cigars, relegating you with stories of the good old days. Inside the studio, my most fresh memories of him were we were recording at a studio in Burbank. This was after Focus had moved out to Colorado, and they would fly in once a month. And you would walk in the studio, and in the recording room, the microphones would be set up in a sort of a half moon shape, maybe 6 or 7 microphones. And Hal always took a particular seat, and it was right next to the window. I, of course, every chance I had, would try and sit next to him. And he would, you know, usually after lunch we'd be recording something, and he would always order a giant styrofoam cup of milk wrapped in tin foil. And he'd be sipping on his milk, and in between a cut he'd lean over and, you know, I'm drinking my moon juice, you know, things like that. Just very silly, very fun. And I heard about his death. We got a phone call, or I guess my mom had gotten a call earlier in the day, and I had come home from school. It was at a rough time in my life. It was hard to really feel anything. I mean, I felt it like the death of a grandfather. But I heard about it on the phone, and then was called a couple weeks later, some months, I don't remember the timeline exactly. And I think it was the first time that everybody had assembled to record since he had passed away. And I could be wrong on that, but it seems to be my recollection. I remember Katie was very upset. A lot of us were. And I remember that whole session, the chair that Hal sat in remained empty. Nobody sat in it. It wasn't discussed. It wasn't talked. I think it just sort of happened. You know, that was Hal's chair. I think at some point in the recording of that session, finally there were too many actors, you know, where everybody had to sit. I think I finally snuck onto that seat. It was a very sad day, because you knew that a good part of the soul of the show wasn't going to be around anymore. And I'll tell you, one of the things that was so wonderful about doing the show was that you got to come in and see Hal, and just feel the warmth of his presence. It's kind of, you know, superlatives fail when you're talking about somebody like Hal Smith, but I remember that being a very heavy day. I haven't had the chance to work with Paul yet. I've met him a couple times, though, and I do get a lot of the same feeling from him that I got from Hal. Just the warmth, you know, he's a guy you especially as a kid, you just want to sit there and just let him talk and just listen. And he definitely, and the only way I could say it, he was like a grandfather to everybody. Just somebody that was so much fun to be around and caring and nice. And I mean, the whole crew and cast were always very nice. Not once was there ever any screaming matches or any egos or anything like that. You know, when we recorded, it was just fun. And Hal, of course, brought a lot of that fun and embodied it. You know, he will always be missed.
Now, how do you feel the show changed after the death of Hal? Was there anything you noticed in the scripts that you received later on, or did you feel the show basically stayed true to what it had been for the several years that Hal was the central figure?
I think they've always done their best to hold to the core of the show. But when you're in a situation like that, I would imagine from a writing and a production standpoint, what do? You know, the star, the soul of the show has passed on, and how do you keep it going? I felt that they did the best that they could. And I remember the first time that I got a script that said wit in it. It was a couple years later, I guess. And at that point, I believe they were flying Paul. I think he lived up in Seattle or somewhere like that. So I couldn't believe it. Like, wit. There's a, wit. Where's wit coming from? You know, are they going to splice together old dialogue? So I think they... In a show like that, any kind of serial show, the production is always very tough. I think they did the best that they could, and I think that they tried to stay true to the story. I believe there was some discussion over whether or not to say that Mr. Whitaker had died, but when you're dealing with such a young audience, I think that would have been a bit too much to deal with. So the problem was always, you know, well, what do we do? And I think they just sort of kept it open until Providence would step in and solve the problem for them. And I think it eventually did when Paul got the job. So I'm glad that the character Mr. Whitaker is still around.
How, you obviously haven't heard many of the recent shows, as you've said, but from what you have heard of Adventures in Odyssey in the modern day, how do you feel it compares to the older generation with Jimmy and Donna and, you know, Kurt?
The difference I've noticed in some of the few episodes I've heard is the quality of it's gotten really amazing. I know that when I was there visiting Focus on the Family, you know, they had a full Foley room, which I don't recall them having at the Pomona facility. Those early years were, you know, I don't think any of the kids were professional actors. I think it was a looser show. And now it looks like, from some of the information we've read on your website and stuff, that the quality of talent they're bringing in is much, much of a higher caliber, I think, than what we were. I sort of think of those early years as sort of like lightning striking in a bottle. I seem to recall there were much more discussions that I heard about, you know, well, what do we do about this? What do we do about that? It seems like they've, by now, I'm sure, worked out almost all of those early bugs that were there. And it's a much more professional show. That's not to say that it wasn't professional back then. It was just the kids. It was like being at camp or something, you know. Kids sort of being themselves. And I think now that they're bringing in some really good kids who I'm sure have a lot more acting experience than any of us did.
Now, these next two questions are just a couple ones I threw together earlier this morning. So it's what I call the lightning round. Not very many questions, just a couple things I was thinking of, and I thought, you know, why not ask some of his likes and dislikes?
Sure.
What's your favorite movie?
There's a couple. I really love Shawshank Redemption, I think is a wonderful film. And there's another one that's always on my list. The Big Lebowski is a favorite. I don't know if too many of your fans have seen that one, but I love that. It cracks me up. I love Blazing Saddles, and... some of those, Young Frankenstein is an all-time classic. Pretty much any Mel Brooks movies always make me laugh. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Favorite television show?
I have to say, my wife and I, for many years, were severely and almost dangerously addicted to Friends. I tend to watch a lot of television. I love documentaries. I love the History Channel, Discovery Channel, National Geographic. I love learning about things. I think television is a great tool. Of course, you kind of have to filter everything out and make your own decisions, but I really love anything that has to do with history or how do they dig diamonds out of the earth, you know. Oh, yeah, there's a documentary on A&E called The First 48
that's the homicide investigation one, is that correct? Right.
Really fascinating to kind of see what they go through. So that would be, I watch too much TV, to be honest.
As do I. Who would you feel was your role model growing up?
My grandfather was a big role model of mine growing up. He was similar qualities that Hal Smith embodied, actually. I would say Hal Smith was a role model of mine. Somebody that certainly I aspired to be like. You know, I wanted to get good at this. And two favorite athletes I had were Walter Payton and Nolan Ryan. I was a big Nolan Ryan junkie.
Well, that goes right into the next question. What's your favorite sport?
Football. American football. I guess I have to make that clear to any of my Canadian listeners. I love football. I really enjoy basketball. And having been to a live game, I think hockey is a sport that is pretty unparalleled live. On television, it's kind of hard to get the excitement from it, but a live hockey game is very exciting.
I think it's exciting either way.
You're Canadian.
Yes,
By law, you have to say that.
although we do call it football up here too.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah, we have soccer and football.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if soccer was also football up there as well.
We haven't completely cut off Europe yet. All right. Now we have random question. The color of the shirt that you're currently wearing
is green, dark green, kind of a forest green T-shirt.
Okay. Do you have a favorite actor?
If I had to narrow it down to one, it would either be Jeff Bridges or Gary Oldman. Both tremendously talented guys who don't get into a lot of the media spotlight, which I kind of like. They just do excellent work. And, of course, everybody says Marlon Brando, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino. I can't disagree with any of those. So Denzel Washington's amazing, you know. I think my top 10 list would look a lot like everybody else's top 10 list.
So then flipping genders, who would be your favorite actress?
Everybody says Meryl Streep, and I can't disagree with that either. Sissy Spacek is amazing. Some of the work that Susan Sarandon has done has been quite amazing. But favorite actress? I would have to say Meryl Streep. I think she's the most talented, certainly, ever.
Okay. Your favorite musician or band?
My favorite musician is David Gilmour. He's the guitarist for Pink Floyd, which would lead into my favorite band. Pink Floyd also, I'm very into Radiohead, Flaming Lips. There's a band out of Wales called Super Furry Animals that does a lot of interesting stuff. I love progressive music. I think David Gilmour is probably, as a musician, just one of the most elegant musicians I've ever heard.
What kind of car do you drive?
I drive a rather dusty, dirty 1998 Honda Accord. But that's because I live in a dusty, dirty area. So I like it. It gets good gas mileage, and it's safe.
Well, as long as it's safe, you don't want your daughter getting into any danger.
Absolutely not.
PC or Mac?
Mac.
Which would you prefer, Mac?
Mac. Yes. Currently, this interview is taking place on my PowerBook G4. 17-inch. Ooh.
Well, there you go.
I am a Mac convert, though. I grew up on PCs, and I hated computers. And then my wife was a loyal Mac user, and it was a contentious argument in our early years of our relationship. I converted her from vegetarianism to eating meat. She converted me from PC to Mac, and I'm never going back.
Fair enough. Well, that's all the questions I have for you, David. As many people might not be aware, today's actually David's birthday. So I'd like
29.
To wish 29, there you go. That's actually one of the questions we had earlier on that I don't believe I got a chance to ask. So David is 29 years old. Happy birthday, David.
Thank you, thank you. Oh. Thank you for the interview. This has been a lot of fun. And it's nice to actually get to hear your voice. Oh, for a change.
It's great to hear yours, although I've been hearing it for many, many years.
Well, now we've slightly evened the scale, and maybe someday I'll get to hear the voices of many other fans. Their emails are cool, too, you know, so.
Is there an email address they can contact or reach you at?
I believe the javegriffin.com website has a link you can email that, and we'll get it, and you know, respond back to anybody that you know wants to be responded back to. That'd probably be the easiest way to go.
Is there anything else that you can think of, David?
Can't think of anything other than just to tell all the fans that how grateful I am that they've listened to the show for so long. And you know, you think about the kind of run that this show has had. I would have to imagine at some point it's rather historic to have a show going on for 20 years, or almost 20 years at this point. And that's because there's, you know, great listeners who keep tuning in and staying involved and getting on websites. And so my thanks to all those listeners all over the world.
They appreciate you just as much, if not more. I believe you've been a part of everyone's life for so many years that it's hard to not imagine a world, at least for an Adventures in Odyssey fan, without Jamie Barclay having been, you know, on the radio weekly and nightly, as the case may be in my family and many other families.
That's really cool to hear, because it is something that, you know, there are periods of time where I completely forget that I did it. And doing an interview like this is great. I had the same excitement, you know, knowing that I was going to record an episode. It's great to be able to think about it again. And I hope some information I've given provides another level of excitement to the fans and a greater appreciation for all the hard work that goes on in the show, not on my end, but definitely with the writers and the producers and all the wonderful cast that's come through over the years. You know, I hope the fans have a little more knowledge of it now.